Good afternoon. It is Thursday, March 19th, 2020. It is 4:01 p.m. This is a special meeting of the Morro Bay City Council. I am at Veterans Hall, 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. We have four council members phoning in due to the global coronavirus pandemic. I will ask the clerk to do roll call to make sure we have a quorum.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes, I'm here.
Councilmember Davis?
Present.
Councilmember Heller?
Here.
And Councilmember McPherson?
I'm here too.
Thank you.
So we do have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. We also have our city attorney on the line with me at City Hall. We have Mr. Collins, our city manager, our city clerk, Dana Swanson, as well as our chief financial officer, finance director, Jennifer Calloway, and Chief Steve Knuckles here as well. Pursuant to Governor's Executive Order Number N29-20 issued on March 17, 2020, in response to the present state of emergency in existence due to the threat of COVID-19, the City Council is authorized to hold public meetings via teleconferencing and to make meetings accessible electronically to all members of the public seeking to observe and to address the legislative body. In all requirements in the Brown Act, expressly or impliedly, requiring the physical presence of members, the clerk, or other personnel of the body, or of the public as a condition of participation in a quorum for a public meeting are hereby waived. Public participation, in accordance with Executive Order N-29-20 and guidance from the California State Department of Public Health on gatherings, remote public participation is allowed in the following ways. One, due to social distancing, community members are strongly encouraged to submit agenda correspondence in advance of the meeting and watch the meeting live on either cable channel 20 or streamlined on the city's website. Two, agenda correspondence received by the city clerk's office prior to the meeting will be published on the city website with a final update 1 hour prior to the meeting start time. Number three, any public comment received after 3 p.m. on March 19th will be accepted by email to City Clerk, that's CityClerk, at morrobayca.gov. Once again, if you are a member of the public that would like to give public comment during this meeting, please do so via this link, cityclerk@morrobayca.gov. Each email received after 3 p.m., but prior to the close of public comment, will be read into the record by the city clerk, subject to the allowed 3-minute time limit. Number four, in order to prevent and mitigate the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and limit potential spread within the city of Morro Bay in accordance with Executive Order N-29-20, the city will not make available a physical location from which members of the public may observe the meeting and offer public comment. I wanted to read that into the record, ladies and gentlemen. We're in interesting times with regard to the global pandemic of the coronavirus. We have a special meeting agenda. We will be providing in the future information regarding how you may access future council meetings. For now, we have suspended all non-essential advisory body, planning commission, and other city council meetings due to the recent recommendations that came down from the Department of Public Health, San Luis Obispo County, which I'll allude to in my opening comments in just a moment. I will be here just today at City Hall. In the future, I will also be joining via teleconferencing with the remainder of the council for future meetings. I wanted to report to you the current status of the coronavirus global pandemic issue, specifically as it relates to San Luis Obispo County. I've been fortunate as mayor of the city to be involved in a daily conference call with all mayors of San Luis Obispo County, the Board of Supervisors, as well as Congressman Carbajal and Assemblymember Cunningham. And on that conference call, we have received daily briefings every day at 2 o'clock from our public health director, Dr. Penny Borenstein, and her staff. Globally, there have been 241,555 cases of coronavirus as of today. There are 9,982 deaths globally. In the United States, we have 11,780 cases that have been diagnosed. There have been 3,505 deaths. There have been 171 deaths in the U.S., and that's an increase over the last 24 hours of 39. In California, there have been 971 cases and 19 deaths. In San Luis Obispo County, as of today, 2 p.m., there have been 13 confirmed cases, no deaths. All are classified by the public health director as moderate. We have seen a doubling of the number of cases in the last 2 to 3 days, and according to Dr. Borenstein, it will be typical for us in this county to see a doubling of the number of cases diagnosed every 3 to 5 days as this pandemic continues. There have been a number of updates also given regarding testing. Many community members have asked about testing for the coronavirus. What do you do if you're ill? How do you get tested? I will tell you that the Public Health Department has a Class 3 level laboratory. They're able to do tests on site with a referral by a physician. The turnaround time is about 4 hours, and they have a capacity to do approximately 50 tests per day. In addition to that, we've been made aware that in the private sector, there are a number of physicians' offices as well as urgent care centers that are doing coronavirus lab testing for patients that fit the appropriate criteria as determined by the healthcare practitioner. I want to assure you that Morro Bay is in tune with the recommendations of the health department, which I'm going to review in just a moment. I also want to refer you as a community to the health department's website. It's readyslow.org. That's readyslow.org, readyslow.org. There is ongoing information there regarding not only the numbers of cases, but what you can do with regard to your own hygiene practices to help prevent the spread of this coronavirus that we're dealing with at the present time. Just yesterday, the Chief Administrative Officer of the county issued a local emergency order and regulation. It's number 4 regarding COVID-19. It is a mandatory shelter-at-home order. And I wanted to briefly highlight the components of that because I've had, again, a number of members of the community ask exactly what this means, what they should do. I'm reading directly from the directive itself, and let me give you the highlights of exactly what this mandatory shelter-at-home directive involves. First of all, violation or failure to comply with the order is a misdemeanor, punishable by fine, imprisonment, or both. Because of the fact that COVID-19 presents an imminent and proximate threat to public health, The health department, in conjunction with the chief administrative officer, have issued this local emergency order. The order is effective as of Thursday, today, March 19th, 2020, at 5 p.m., and shall continue in effect until April 17th, 2020, at 12:01 p.m., unless it is modified or rescinded by the chief administrative officer as per recommendation of the chief public health officer of our county. It will be reviewed every 14 days to determine the need to continue the order. The intent of the order is to ensure that the greatest number of people in our county remain in their places of residence to the maximum extent feasible, while enabling essential services in the community to continue. And I will try to expand on what essential services are. They're quite detailed and often misunderstood. And this is to slow the spread of COVID-19 as much as possible. Distancing requirements, and I'll go over those in detail, are elaborated on in the order, and all provisions of the order shall be interpreted to effectuate the intent of reducing the viral transmission in our county. Failure to comply with any provisions of this order constitutes an imminent threat to public health, and I can't emphasize how important these directives are. The order reads that all individuals currently living within San Luis Obispo County are ordered to remain in their place of residence. To the extent individuals are using shared or outdoor spaces, they must at all times, as reasonably possible, maintain social distancing of at least 6 feet. And we are modeling that here in our meeting today with the few staff members that we have present. This is to prevent not only droplet contamination, but also touch contamination from individual to individual. All persons may leave their residences only for essential activities, and there are quite a list of essential activities that I'm going to elaborate on in just a moment. These include essential government functions or to operate what is defined as an essential business. All businesses in the county, except essential businesses as defined in a moment, are required to cease all activities at facilities located within the county, except for minimum basic operations. And again, I will clarify that. It goes on to say, for clarity, businesses may also perform activities at their own residences. All essential businesses are strongly encouraged to remain open, and again, I will define what the essential businesses are. However, they shall comply with social distancing measures, as previously mentioned. All public and private gatherings of any number of people occurring outside a household or living unit are prohibited, except for the limited purposes, as again I will outline for you. All travel, including but not limited to travel on foot, bicycle, scooter, motorcycle, automobile, or public transit, except essential travel and for essential activities, is prohibited. And again, I will outline what those activities that are permissible are. People must use public transit only for purposes of performing essential activities. People riding on public transit must comply with social distancing requirements. Number 7 of the order talks about making the problem worse. It talks about some individuals who contract COVID-19 virus have unrecognized infection and have only mild symptoms, which means that they may not be even aware that they are carrying the virus. Because even people without symptoms can transmit the disease, and because recent evidence shows the disease is easily spread, gatherings can result in preventable transmission of the virus. The scientific evidence shows that at this stage of the emergency, it is essential to slow virus transmission as much as possible to protect the most vulnerable and to protect the healthcare system from being overwhelmed. And let me tell you that the issues that we have been talking about on our daily conference calls concern the potential lack of available hospital beds, including in particular ICU beds. Just yesterday, of the total number of beds available, ICU beds available in the county, which number approximately 65, only 9 beds were unoccupied at that time. In addition to that, this disease can cause comorbid or secondary issues, including respiratory failure necessitating the use of a ventilator, and the determination by the public health officer and chief administrative officer of the county have determined that we are woefully in a huge deficit with regard to the number of ventilators available, such that the county has authorized the purchase of over $500,000 worth of ventilators, and that is an additional 100 ventilators for the county that will soon be arriving in order to meet the projected needs of this global pandemic. The order goes on to say, and I'm not going to put my hand in my mouth, trying to turn the pages here. The order goes on to say that individuals may leave their residence to work for or obtain services at any healthcare operations, including hospitals, clinics, dentists, pharmacies, pharmaceutical biotechnology companies, blood bank services, or other healthcare facilities, healthcare suppliers, home healthcare services, behavioral healthcare services, or ancillary healthcare services. In other words, one of the exceptions would be if you need healthcare, you may go and receive that healthcare. Healthcare operations does not include fitness centers and exercise gyms and similar facilities. Individuals may leave their residence to provide any services to perform any work necessary to the operations and maintenance of essential infrastructure, included but not limited to public works, construction of housing that has already been in process, airport operations, water, sewer, gas, electrical, oil refining, energy production, roads and highways, public transportation, solid waste collection and removal, internet and telecommunications systems, provided that they carry out those services and work in compliance with social distancing requirements. All first responders, emergency management personnel, emergency dispatchers, court personnel, law enforcement personnel, certain public health personnel, and others who need to perform essential services are categorically exempt from this order. Nothing in this order shall prohibit any individual from performing or accessing essential government functions as determined by the governmental entity performing those functions. And Mr. Collins will speak to the essential functions that will continue to be provided by the city in just a moment. For purposes of this order, covered businesses include any for-profit or not-for-profit or educational entity, regardless of the nature of the service, the function they perform, or its corporate or entity structure. Let me define for you what the county defines as those services that are essential. And there is quite a list, but I thought it would be important for you to note those. Let's see, starting on page 5 here. The following definitions and exemptions apply to the order. These are the exceptions that allow you to leave your home and go out to do these essential functions. First of all, you should always practice social distancing, maintaining a physical distance of at least 6 feet or greater from other people, avoiding direct contact with people or object in public places during the outbreak of a contagious disease in order to minimize exposure and reduce transmission of infections. Individuals may leave their residence to perform any of the following essential activities: tasks essential to their health and safety, or the health and safety of their family, including their pets, By way of example, but not without limitation, obtaining medical supplies, going to your pharmacy to get medication, visiting your healthcare professional, or obtaining supplies that you may need to work from home. Number two, to obtain necessary services or supplies for yourself or your family, household members, or to deliver those supplies to others, such as, by way of example and without limitation, canned food, dried goods, fresh fruits, vegetables, pet supply, fresh meats, fish, poultry, and any other household consumer products. In other words, products needed for daily consumption, for maintaining your food supply and sanitation in your home, and regular supplies for your house. It's okay to go out, go to the grocery store, and obtain those. Number three, to engage in outdoor activity, provided that you as an individual comply with social distancing. And that includes walking, hiking, running, bicycling, swimming, or camping with household members only. Those activities are not prohibited. You may do that as long as you maintain social distancing. Number four, to perform work providing essential products and services at an essential business, or otherwise to carry out activities specifically permitted in this order. Number five, to care for a family member or pet in another household. For purposes of this order, individuals may leave their residence to work for or obtain services at healthcare clinics, hospitals, etc., as I outlined previously. You may leave your residence to provide any services to perform any work necessary to the operations and maintenance of essential infrastructure, and I've outlined those previously. All first responders, as I mentioned, emergency management personnel, dispatchers, court personnel, law enforcement personnel, and certain public health personnel are exempt. Nothing in this order shall prohibit any governmental function that is essential from continuing. Covered business entities, again, include both for-profit and not-for-profit, educational, regardless of the nature of their services. The following are the definitions for essential businesses. Number one, healthcare operations or essential infrastructure. Number two, grocery stores, certified farmers markets, farm and produce stands, supermarkets, food banks, convenience stores, and other establishments may continue to operate that are engaged in the retail sale of food, dry goods, fresh fruits, etc. This includes stores that sell groceries and also sell other non-grocery products and products necessary to maintaining the safety, sanitation, and essential operation of your residence. C, food cultivation, including farming, livestock, and fishing. Again, these are the exemptions. D, businesses that provide food, shelter, including hotels, motels, and similar establishments, social services, and other necessities of life for economically disadvantaged or otherwise needy individuals. E, newspapers, television, radio, and other media services are exempt. Gas stations and auto supply, auto repair, and related facilities are exempt. Banks and related financial institutions are exempt. Hardware stores are exempt. Plumbers, electricians, exterminators, and other service providers who provide services that are necessary to maintaining the safety, sanitation, and essential operation of residences are exempt. Businesses providing mailing and shipping services, including the post office and P.O. box areas, are exempt. Educational institutions, including public and K-12 schools, colleges, and universities, are exempt. However, we know all of those have gone to distance learning in our county and have been closed. Laundromats, dry cleaners, and laundry service providers are exempt. And here's something key for our facility. Restaurants and other facilities that prepare or serve food, but only for delivery or carryout. That is, restaurants cannot have indoor seating or outdoor seating facilities, but can only provide food for takeout, preferably at the curbside or through delivery services. Schools also that provide free meals may continue to do so. However, there are certain conditions that must be met for them to comply with to ensure social distancing. Businesses that supply products needed for people to work from home are exempt. Businesses that supply other essential businesses with the support or supplies necessary to operate any of the entities I've talked about are exempt. Businesses that ship or deliver groceries, food goods, or services directly to residences are exempt. Airlines, taxis, and other private transportation providers providing transportation services necessary for essential activities are exempt. Home-based care for seniors, adults, and children exempt. Residential facility shelters for seniors, adults, and children are exempt. Legal accounting services when providing legally mandated compliant activities are exempt. Child care facilities providing services that enable employees exempted to work are actually exempt. However, they must practice social distancing. Businesses engage in any form of cultivation of products for personal use, consumption like farming, ranching, livestock, fishing, dairies, creameries, wineries, breweries, and associated activities are exempt, including but not limited to activities or businesses associated with planting, growing, harvesting, processing, cooling, storing, packaging, and transporting those products. However, wineries are closed to on-site gatherings. However, you can go for pickups for wineries. And lastly, ongoing commercial construction. If you already are involved in a construction project that has been commenced prior to the date of this notice, may continue to be continued as an activity. That is an extensive list. I apologize for the time it took to read that, but I think it's very important for our community to know that right now, in order to contain the transmission of this virus, we must self-isolate and contain exposures as much as possible. The CDC tells us that many carriers are asymptomatic or show no symptoms, yet can transmit the disease to others. Thusly, you must assume that any individual not known to you that is negative either for a test or has no symptoms whatsoever is potentially carrying the disease. And universal precautions, including social distancing, must be maintained. This is for your health and for the public health of our community. The website, again, for the county is readyslow.org. You will find the complete order from the county that I only read part of it to you, by the way, at that site. Again, readyslow, readyslow.org. We also have a COVID-19 button on the city website that you could hit that will provide you with information. I want to say this in talking to a number of healthcare providers. Many have asked me to make statements regarding routine or elective cases. In fact, today, the director of public health for the county has not mandated but formally requested that patients talk to their physicians about postponing elective or non-urgent surgeries or routine visits to doctors' offices. Now, this isn't for something that's an acute issue where you need to be seen, but this is potentially something that could be put off for another 3 or 4 weeks until perhaps the numbers of individuals visiting these offices and also potentially the influx of patients that we'll see in our hospitals is over. And so I'm just bringing that information forward as a request from the medical community, validated today by the county public health officer. For us, our concern is not only for all of us in our community who may be well, but for our vulnerable populations. Those include individuals over the age of 60 who also may have what we call pre-existing other conditions such as diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, respiratory disease in general, suppressed immune system, cancer, etc. These individuals are particularly at high risk. And we all should adhere strictly to these guidelines, but those are the individuals that are likely to develop more serious disease with COVID-19. We're also extremely concerned about our business community as a city. We know that the impact on our local economy will be significant. Staff is working on some recommendations that will come in the future that will possibly offer not only local assistance to some of the businesses that will be impacted in our community by this, but also to help provide for information regarding accessing not only federal funding that will be available, but also state funding that will soon be available. Our great Chamber of Commerce and through the President and CEO, Erica Crawford, are working with the city potentially to become a clearinghouse for businesses to access information on how you can get help through a number of different agencies that are here to assist you during these difficult economic times where many businesses, unfortunately, do not have access to business interruption insurance because this is considered to be more or less a pandemic issue that is outside of the majority of policies that cover business interruption. And we understand the significant impact and are want to hear from you, but also want to let you know that we are partnering with the Chamber to look at offering information assistance to you as a one-stop shopping place in the future. With that long-winded review, ladies and gentlemen, I just ask, number one, that you do not panic, but that you do not put your head in the sand, no pun intended, and deny the fact that this is here. It is a growing concern in our county. We must do whatever we can and do our parts with regard to the mandates from our public health office to ensure the health and safety of our population. And I've asked Mr. Collins to give us an update on a number of programs that the city is making available and also a poll that will be available for you to let us know what your needs are. Thank you. Mr. Collins.
All right. Thank you, Mayor, Council members on the phone, and community members watching now and later. I'm going to go over the staff report for item one on the agenda, which is to adopt resolution number 2320, ratifying the City of Morro Bay's local emergency declaration, adopt resolution number 2420, adopting the City of Morro Bay's emergency and disaster purchasing policy, adopt resolution number 2520 concerning publication of California emergency order and law regarding residential evictions. And that correlates with the recommendations before you, plus the add-on to for council to discuss and provide directions on actions related to the federal, state, and county orders that were just described by the mayor related to the pandemic of the virus known as COVID-19. I don't need to go into all the details about COVID other than just to state that it is a true emergency nationwide. The governor issued a declaration of state emergency on March 4th, 2020. President did the same on March 13th. The county did, County of San Luis Obispo Health Officer issued a local emergency and health emergency on March 13th, 2020. Understanding what was coming our way and where we are in the process and where we are in terms of how things are proceeding with the virus, I went forward and issued a local emergency declaration for the City of Morro Bay on March 14th, 2020. The health and safety and welfare of the city, residents, businesses, visitors, and staff are of the utmost importance to the city, and additional future measures may be needed to protect the community. Based on what I saw happening, I felt it was important to make that declaration. And based on state code related to declarations of this nature, must come before the council within 7 days to ratify that decision or else the order is no longer in place. After consideration of the facts, again, issued that declaration on March 14th, 2020. As the mayor mentioned, we do have several city services that are still being continued to be provided, which I will discuss. Also before the council tonight is the, and with this item is the emergency and disaster purchasing policy, which we need to have in place to help us for future consideration of FEMA and other potential outside funding to recoup the expenses that your city has turned in many ways into an emergency response apparatus to ensure the safety and welfare of our community. So this emergency and disaster purchasing policy is important for that purpose, as well as outlining that we believe it's imperative that we get the things that we need to conduct this important provision of service to our communities as expeditiously as possible, which is why this purchase policy has a priority for local, community, and county vendors first in order to expeditiously receive those goods and services and prevent further threat to public health and safety. The other components of that draft policy are in the attachments. I'm not going to go through that at this time. And also before you is the consideration to support the state order and law on residential evictions. Governor Newsom issued an executive order number 2820, which in part ordered in section one of that order the time limitation set forth in Penal Code Section 396 Subdivision F concerning protections against residential evictions is hereby waived. Those protections shall be in effect through May 31st, 2020. The city desires that residents of Morro Bay are informed and aware of their rights as residential tenants under said state emergency orders and law. Adoption of the related resolution will provide for publication of the state order and law on residential evictions, so may Morro Bay residents know these rights during this time of emergency. The city has sprung into action since March 14th, probably prior to. We were watching this pretty closely. Several staff members, especially our fire chief, Steve Knuckles, who's been paying close attention to this ever since it sprung up in China in December, and been working very closely with our county partners and watching this and being prepared for it, having countywide coordination meetings as early as late February on this. Since that time, the city has activated the Emergency Operations Center, which will be discussed in the next item. We've been doing our best to provide updates to the city and city leaders and the community on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day, to help keep them abreast of the significant changes that are occurring in our lives on almost an hourly basis, it seems like. It's important that they have that information as soon as possible to help adjust in their lives. Again, the purpose of most of those abrupt changes are to ensure that those most vulnerable amongst us and our community are saved, and that lives are saved, and that our health system isn't overrun by a surge of patients seeking emergency care. So the city has been tracking the county orders and have been following along and trying to do our best to ensure that those orders are carried out here locally. As it relates to the county order issued yesterday, the shelter at home, we take that very seriously. There are carve-outs in that declaration of the order regarding city services that are essential. And we did send out a press release earlier this afternoon, which is available on the city website. If you click on the COVID-19 button at the top, it'll take you to that webpage, and the press releases are towards the bottom of that page. Which, again, the most recent press release speaks to the city services that are available and will be provided so long as we're able to. So I'll go to that real quick here. So I'm going to read through the list. I apologize if it's a bit tedious, but it's important. Again, this is on the website, but I want to make sure that folks are aware of what we're providing, and primarily it's for the safety and welfare of our community. Under the fire department, emergency response will be provided as normal. Under the police services, the police department is responding to all emergencies calls for service, but have suspended all non-essential services at this time. Those non-essential services include live scan, which is fingerprinting, citizen ride-alongs, all meetings held within the department, ticket sign-offs, lobby assistance. The city is asking residents to request phone reports in lieu of an officer responding to the residence or location when appropriate. Dispatch can assist with assessing the need for an officer response. Under Harbor Services, a full response to all ocean, bay, beach, and waterfront emergencies or urgent public safety calls. Modified response to waterfront medical aid calls restricted to assisting Morro Bay Fire Department in a secondary role. Regular bay patrols but limiting contacts and interactions. Not performing any non-essential activities or requests from the public, other agencies, and performing a warn and advise role for any gatherings or business activities that violate the county order. Transit, Morro Bay Transit will remain in operation with existing days, hours, routing. This is subject to change as conditions change. Utilities, water, sewer, wastewater treatment, normal services as provided. We do not provide trash directly. We contract for that service, and that will be provided as normal, I believe. For city parks, parks will remain open, but recreational components will be closed, including play structures, skate park, tennis courts, and pickleball courts. Public restrooms will remain open as following: the Del Mar Park, Cloisters, Tidelands Park, and we'll have portable restrooms and hand washing stations at the harbor restroom, or near the harbor restroom, the city park restroom, Memorial Rock parking lot restroom, Centennial Park restroom, and Lila Kaiser. Again, those will only have portable restrooms and wash stations. All other city restrooms will be closed. Park trash pickup will occur as normal. Facilities and vehicle maintenance will be normal operations, pretty much into internal stuff that we need to get done, and they will be operating with the social distancing requirements. Community development, permitting, and inspections. The city will be continuing to facilitate the normal development process on a limited basis by appointment from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Administrative functions will operate primarily as normal, with several folks working from home, anybody in the office, again, performing their duties with social distancing in mind. The city's Morro Bay Cares program, which was just launched this week, is offering a variety of services, including Are You Okay?, which is a new is an existing program which you can sign up for daily wellness calls, and a list of open restaurants providing meal takeout, pickup, and delivery service. If you would like to like more information on either of these programs or general information, please visit the COVID-19 page, which is www.morrobayca.gov/COVID-19, which has a lot of great information. The fire chief will also talk about the volunteer program that he's just stood up today. If you are interested in volunteering or helping, please email voad@morrobayca.gov. voad@morrobayca.gov. The fire chief will give more information on the next item on that. The mayor alluded to it in his opening remarks, but the Chamber of Commerce is working very hard to assist our local businesses and that are extremely impacted by the disruption caused by the pandemic. Information about their efforts and available resources can be found on their website at www.morrobaychamber.org. We really appreciate their significant efforts to outreach to our businesses that are impacted by this, provide hour-by-hour updates to them, and helping them find resources in this great time of peril. So that gives you a rundown of information. I also want to state that we will continue to do our best to provide daily updates on our website as far as information is concerned. Has been rapidly evolving situation since last week. Many of your staff members have been working around the clock just to keep pace with what's going on. We greatly appreciate the volunteer efforts and the amazing generosity that we've witnessed. Folks like Carol Truesdale, who's helping push out information to things like Nextdoor, or Geo, who's standing up new Facebook volunteer sites, and just a whole list of folks who are calling in to say, how can I help? Rotary clubs, Lion clubs, etc. That the schools providing lunches to kids whose lives have been disrupted. It's been quite tremendous to see how the community spirit has come alive in these tough times. So I hope that helps kind of give an indication of where we're going and how we're going to respond to this. It is a day-by-day thing, and we do need to say that those services that we talked about just a minute ago could evolve over time depending on just what the county decides to do, and they're making their decisions based on science and data, and that's relieving to us, so we sort of follow their direction. So again, the recommendations for this item, and certainly want to turn it over to council for a good discussion, is to adopt the resolution number 2320, ratifying the City of Morro Bay's local emergency declaration, adopt resolution number 2420, adopting the City of Morro Bay's emergency and disaster purchasing policy, and adopt resolution number 2520, concerning publication of California emergency order and law regarding residential evictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Appreciate that update. And Madam Clerk, I'm going to open public comment. Have we received any public comment via our city clerk at morrobayca.gov site?
No, we have not. Agenda correspondence was published at 3 p.m. as noted on the agenda, and no correspondence has been received since that time.
Okay. So with that, I'll close public comment and bring it back. Open it up for council questions. Let me start with Council Member Davis. Any questions on agenda item number one?
No, I do not have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Heller, any questions on agenda item number one?
Mr. Mayor, I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member McPherson, any questions on agenda item number one?
Just to ask a clarifying question, does that include all of the various resolutions that we're talking about in item number one?
Yes.
So the emergency declaration and the emergency and disaster purchasing policy and regarding residential evictions?
Yes.
Okay, then I do have a couple questions.
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry. This is for the city manager. Have you defined the current situation as crisis conditions so that the emergency and disaster purchasing policy would take effect immediately?
Yes, I have.
You have. Okay. And would this policy enable you to do any of the things that were requested by Erica Crawford in her email that is included as public comment?
Yes.
Or would we need to agendize that for a future council meeting?
I would have to look at that closely, Councilmember McPherson. I think some may be captured in that, but there may be others that extend beyond that, and that might be a council discussion under this item, or maybe the fiscal emergency item, which is item three tonight.
Okay. And will you be moving forward with other projects that I know are in the pipeline where we may have RFPs out at this time?
If I understand you correctly, yes, we will continue working on projects that are in the pipeline. The county health order, the county order yesterday does allow for essential services to continue, which includes public infrastructure projects. So, for instance, the water reclamation facility project can continue forward, and other commercial projects that already have building permits and are underway can continue, and residential projects can continue. Internal city projects can continue, though that's all with a caveat that those can only be performed if social distancing guidelines can be followed, and if not, those projects cannot proceed.
Okay. But we would be moving forward with any bids under this emergency power that we would be giving you to execute purchasing decisions. You could continue to do that.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. And then regarding the eviction notice, I was participating in a conference call yesterday with the Housing Services Oversight Council, and it was stated that while that eviction notice would take effect, renters would still be required to pay. They would have a certain amount of time to pay. So it doesn't forgive the rent. It simply means they cannot be evicted. Is that your understanding?
I would leave that to the city attorney.
Okay.
Councilmember McPherson, rent is still payable. They're simply released from being evicted for the time period for failure to pay rent. if it's COVID-19 related, the rent will still be due. And the county's order on evictions is much broader than the state order. And there's a lot of details in the county order on when the back rent is due if it can't be paid. And for anyone listening, the county order provides that if you cannot pay your rent due to the COVID-19 crisis for financial reasons, then you need to notify in writing, which includes email, your landlord within 30 days of the rent being due.
Okay. And how will we alert our residents about this policy?
Well, I'll attempt to answer that. I may look to our acting public information officer, Jennifer Calloway, but we, at minimum, would look to use the same resources we've been using with getting this emergency information out, which is using our city social media feeds, our own personal social media sites, which have been effective as well, encouraging all council members to send it out to networks, our commissioners to send it out to networks, our folks in the community are trying to help who are getting this information out on sites like Nextdoor. There's been talk about maybe sending out a mailer of some sort. I mean, there's a lot of ways we can do it, but at minimum, the channels we've been using, which I think have been pretty effective, we will utilize all of those to get this out.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis, any questions?
Yeah, I have a few. And maybe you already went over them and I missed it as I was listening to the description of what was happening, so I apologize. But have we received any requests or notices from leaseholders regarding rent collection on the leasehold, you know, that the city is the landlord for?
I'm not aware of that. However, I think there is questions going on or there seems to be indications that some folks are looking at that, as well as hoteliers asking about TOT collections. So I don't know how widespread that is, but we've heard folks asking amongst themselves. And Erica Crawford, the chamber CEO, has also indicated that, you know, that's part of a discussion. But I don't know how prevalent that is. I'll turn it over to Jen Calloway. She can add on that.
As the city manager said, at this point we've had questions about what the city intends to do if people can't make payments on time with their leases. We haven't had any specific requests at this point that I'm aware of, and it's certainly something we've been having conversations on internally on what would be fair and reasonable on our end to help out our local businesses.
And should we expect some kind of policy coming forward, or what's the trajectory on that?
That would be probably under item 3, which would be a good way to sort of join the conversation, because we will have significant impacts on our ability to pay for existing services down the road based on the indications, the economic indications that today. So you probably want to have that conversation in joint with economic relief into the local business community.
Okay, and then did you mention, I'm sure you did, what are the restrictions in terms of hotels and VRs? I had a resident email me and tell me that they had guests in the VRs next door to them that had come from San Francisco, although San Francisco has a shelter at home ordinance to order in place. And then those folks specifically went grocery shopping to take groceries back with them to San Francisco. And this resident was concerned about what the restrictions are on hotels and VRs.
Yes. Let's go to the order itself. I'm hard time tracking. I think it's 11.
Yeah, it's
11 point C. Point D, so it's on page 6 of the order from the county that was revised last night. It says businesses that provide food, shelter, which is including hotels, motels, and similar establishments, social services, and other necessities of life for economically disadvantaged or otherwise needy individuals. That's called out, and there may be another section in this order related to hotels and motels, but those it leaves open that those lodging establishments are considered essential services because they provide shelter, and there are folks who are maybe coming to town to help out those who may be having a hard time, so maybe visiting from other parts of the state or country, staying in hotels so that they can assist, you know, an elderly grandparent or parent. So we've heard that that's going on.
Okay. And then I had somebody else contact me that said they were concerned about the about food chain interruption, and I know that, you know, various grocery stores are out of various items, but then other grocery stores seem to have them, and has there been any information come through about food chain interruption, and does the city have any purview or messaging around that?
We are the seven city managers are working closely with the county administrative officer Wade Horton on this issue, and they're all sort of doing our best to sort of help where we can and push for insurance that we have those necessities of life, if you will. Seems like overall we're doing pretty good compared to other communities that have seen run on staples, staple items, that is, for the basics of life. So Wade Horton is tracking that very closely and seeing what they can do to help.
Okay. And then you mentioned possible direct letter to residents. Somebody else emailed me or messaged me and asked if the Are You Okay information was going to go out in a mailer in addition to being on the website and on social media to make sure that it gets to residents who are not online.
We can work on getting that information out as well as any further information on evictions or other city services via a mailer using our utility billing listings.
Okay. And then are there, maybe this is the question more for the mayor, who mentioned ventilators, and was there a time frame on when these ventilators were supposed to arrive?
Yes. Let's see. Today's meeting, the let me get my notes here. So 100 ventilators have been ordered. 30 ventilators are expected to be received within 10 to 11 days, 70 more within 2 to 3 weeks, for a total of 100. So that's the current, and that could change again tomorrow, but that's as of today.
And was there talk, maybe this information came out after your meeting, but the Tribune reported today that the governor has said that he expects 56% of Californians to contract COVID in the next 2 months. Was there talk about, I mean, so that's millions and millions of people. I don't know that that necessarily means 56% of, you know, people in every county or people in every city, but was there conversation about what else would be done besides the ventilators and the hospital beds if, in fact, the rates increase? And I guess as I ask this question, I want to reiterate the importance of shelter at home, because if that's the case, then we'd really want to stretch that time frame out. But was there any conversation about those numbers that he said that the governor stated?
Good question, by the way, not that the governor had stated, and that was not mentioned on the call, nor had I seen that specific information. What was discussed was that we could and should expect a doubling every 3 to 5 days, and that nationally, with regard to not only the United States but globally, with areas that have done mass testing, there's about a 20% positive rate, so 1 in 5. Now, I can't extrapolate that either locally or to California, but I can tell you what was mentioned is the national data where there's been mass testing, positive tests have totaled approximately 20%, 1 in 5.
And did the county say anything about the plan to free up more beds?
They're working.
I understand there's only 9 available, but.
Right. So the CAO is working with the 4 hospital administrators in the county. We have a total of 403 hospital beds. As of yesterday, 91 beds were available, and we have a total of 56 ICU beds. 9 were available yesterday. They are working to expand capacity. The primary issue is the postponement of elective, non-essential, non-urgent surgeries. Where there can be potential complications in the utilization of those beds. And by preventing those, or postponing those, I should say, that should open up and increase the capacity. There's also discussion about the county looking at additional hospital sites to do temporary, my term, construction and or temporary alternative hospital sites should there be a rapid escalation in the numbers.
Okay, and then I understand this need to not cause panic but also convey the seriousness of the situation. Morro Bay has a pretty high population of folks in the 65 plus age range. Is there any talk at the county about Morro Bay being in a unique situation compared to other cities, given the age of our population?
No, just a continued emphasis on the fact that now they're using the age of 50. 50 or older, especially with any secondary illnesses, as I mentioned previously, immunosuppression, cancer, diabetes, congestive heart failure, chronic heart failure, and respiratory illness. These are very high-risk individuals, and those individuals should consider using alternative family members, if at all possible, to obtain the essential services that they might need, for instance, grocery shopping, meal preparation, and those things. But they've not singled out Morro Bay in any way as having a high proportion of individuals over 50. It's just been a countywide discussion of that need.
Okay. And then I don't know if this is for the city manager or the fire chief, but I had a resident contact me and ask if the city was going to supply hand sanitizer. They expressed, an older resident who expressed that they were afraid to leave their home because they don't have access to hand sanitizer. And I told them I didn't think that's something that the city would supply. I've seen more recent information that says you should be washing your hands. You don't necessarily need hand sanitizer. And I was wondering if there's clarification on if the city would provide that and what the recommended procedure is. Do we have to have hand sanitizer to leave the house?
Mr. Mayor and Council, it's Steve Knuckles, Fire Chief. Right now, there is a major shortage of hand sanitizer. Even on the first responder end of it, we are searching every rock, trying to find hand sanitizer for first responders. You know, the best prevention is stay at home. Keep the germs from coming to you. Secondarily, please, I'm really hoping we do get a good response from our citizens to join the Morro Bay Cares program, that they can join on our website. Also, they can call the fire station, and we will sign them up, where we will have our CERT members call Monday through Friday, call everyone that's on that list to check on them. We are going to take every request. We may not be able to fill all of them, but we need to know everyone's request. So if we do find a source for such as hand sanitizer, we may be able to get some out. But at this time, there is regionally and statewide, there is a tremendous shortage on hand sanitizer.
I'll add to that, Councilmember Addison, that's a good question, that if you have access to facilities such as your sink or wash basin, that the recommended method is a 20-second hand wash using any soap. You do not have to use hand sanitizer. Hand sanitizer mainly is helpful if you're out and about, touch external surfaces in a public place and want to immediately wash your hands. That's when that hand sanitizer becomes helpful. But otherwise, if there are facilities available, frequent hand washing in a wash basin, singing happy birthday to yourself, because that's a 20-second song, that's what they're recommending.
That's good. And then we had somebody else contact us and ask if there were any recommendations around items that can be flushed, given the shortage of toilet paper and given our aging infrastructure, if the city is putting out any recommendations on what you can flush down the toilet, if you are needing an alternative to toilet paper, what you should do.
We'll consider that for future web post. We do know for sure that wipes absolutely must not go down the toilet. They devastate the wastewater systems, and we've seen that happen in some other communities. So great point, Councilmember Addison, something we'll consider for a future post on the website. Thank you.
Okay, and then my last question is just about emergency SBA loans, Small Business Association loans, and I'm sure you just said something about it in the introduction and I missed it, but I've seen on a number of chambers share information about emergency Small Business Association loans. And if you said something, if you could repeat it, or if people should check the chamber website for those, for that information.
Sure thing. I'm going on the site myself. It's www.morochamber.org, www.morochamber.org. And on the top of their website, there is a COVID-19 resource page that links to a significant amount of business resources. And at the top of that page has the SBA Disaster Loan Assistance link and SBA Guidance link, in addition to how to deal with layoffs, furloughs, employee information, rent updates, webinars and how-tos for businesses, and links to other very practical resources and additional resources as well, so in English and in Spanish. So a very, very thorough source of information for our business community.
And I believe our county is on.
This is Chris. I was just going to say that also the SBA.gov has information from the federal government about what responses are from the feds on small business issues right now. So I'd encourage anyone interested in what to do for a small business to go to sba.gov.
Okay, and I believe our county is on a list of places where there's emergency or disaster loans available.
Correct, and there was discussion on the call today. I'll just add that a number of us have gone to the site to test it. I will just tell business owners, if you do go to it, be very patient. It's been inundated with a lot of individuals, so the website moves very slowly, and the caution is you need to save your information as you're inputting it frequently, and you will be able to get through the process, but be ready to have a prolonged experience because of the number of individuals looking to looking for funds. What I understand right now is for not-for-profits, the rate loan rate is 2.75%, and for for-profits, it's 3.75%, and there's significant funds available.
And then, sorry, I guess I have two other things. One is I believe there's a list of restaurants, maybe you already mentioned this, but a list of restaurants in Morro Bay that are doing delivery and takeout, and that's under Hot Topics on the city website.
That's correct. There's a list of restaurants on the city's website under Hot Topics and on the city's COVID information page, as well on the as the Chamber of Commerce page. So there's multiple sources to access that listing. And that is being updated as we hear of more restaurants that are providing that service.
Okay, so people can still spend money in Morro Bay. And then finally, I'll just say I support the letter that we got from the director of the chamber, from Erica Crawford. I think we're going to need that economic development contract as we move forward and come out of this. I think the economic development is going to be critical for us to put our energy into.
And I plan to, thank you, Councilmember Addis, I plan to bring that up under item number three, our fiscal emergency plan, and talk about it then. Jen, did you have a comment you wanted to make? No. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
That's it from me. Thank
you. Okay, great. Good questions, everybody. I appreciate the input. I'll bring it back to council now and entertain either a motion or further discussion.
I will move that we...
Councilmember McPherson, I hear you. Go ahead.
I will move that we adopt resolution number 23-20, ratifying the City of Morro Bay's local emergency declaration, and adopt resolution number 24-20, adopting the City of Morro Bay's emergency and death and disaster purchasing policy, and adopt resolution number 25-20, concerning publication of California emergency order and law regarding residential evictions.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Councilmember McPherson for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion? Councilmember Heller?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I just would like to say that I'm thoroughly impressed with the job that you have done, the city manager has done, the chiefs of police and fire, city staff. Remarkable work in a very short period of time with a lot of moving parts, and I just want to go on record as thanking you for all your work up to this point, and it's very much appreciated by me and the members of the community. Thank you so much.
Thank you for those positive comments, and I would echo with regard to staff and their heroic efforts over the last week and a half. Councilmember Davis, any comments?
Yes. The recommendation had one additional part, discuss and provide directions on actions, and that's not part of the motion. So I would like to add a couple of items.
Sure,
I'll that when we get to it.
Great.
And I want to echo Councilman Heller and especially applaud our city manager who's provided extraordinary leadership. So thank you, Scott.
Thank you. And I will entertain item four after the vote. So with that, thank you for those comments. We have a motion by Councilmember McPherson once again for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Addis. And I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Now I'll open it up, starting with Councilmember Davis on item number four, providing any directions or discussion on actions related to federal, state, and county orders related to this pandemic. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, I would like to propose a couple of actions that we can take here in the city. For tenants who rent or lease from the city, I would recommend that we waive penalties and fees for late payments that are related to the COVID. And then in addition, I would ask that we do not shut off anybody's water for late payments. So I have those two recommendations.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, I would just weigh in that there's regulations about against shutting off water. We have no intention of shutting off anybody's water for the next several weeks to months as a result of this. And also do intend on waiving penalties and late fees, at least in the immediate future. And again, that could go on for longer as we assess the situation and how this impacts the city and our community as a whole.
So you did say that...
Very cool. Thank you.
You that is a plan that you haven't...
We aren't legally able to turn off water. We wouldn't anyways. So that is already a restriction in place. No water will get shut off. We'll do our best to do meter reads for people that ask for their water to get shut off. But again, depending on staffing levels, we'll try to accommodate that when we can. And we also intend to be very flexible on the payments and penalties and late fees. We understand the situation that's going on in the community with our residents, our visitors, and our businesses, and trying to be humane about how we carry out those going forward. So there's no intention to enforce any of those in the immediate future to next month or two, and we'll assess again after that.
Councilmember Davis, under item three, I'll propose a general recommendation that I think will encompass the city tenant waiving penalty and late payment issue, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Great.
Yes, thanks.
Okay. Councilmember McPherson, any other comments regarding providing directions or actions related to item number four on agenda item one?
No, but I want to also thank staff for all of the hard work and just how much the community appreciates it, and we all do. So thank you all.
Thank you for that. Councilmember Addis? Any further discussion?
I do want to iterate my gratitude to staff, who I know has fielded a lot of questions and emails and texts and messages from me and from folks that have been sending them my way, and so I very much appreciate that and all of the work that has been done. I think our staff has been a true example for the rest of the county and for other areas.
Thank you for that, and I agree. Councilmember Heller, any further discussion on that fourth item?
No, I have nothing further to bring up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. So that completes item number one, agenda item number two. With that, I'll move us to agenda item number two. Completes item one, I should say, huh?
Yes.
Move us to agenda item number two.
Great.
Pardon me. That's the overview of the emergency operations activation of COVID-19 pandemic local emergency, or the EOC. Let me preface this by thanking Chief Knuckles, who seems to thrive in these kinds of administrative organizational opportunities that are significant during these times. And Steve, I just want to thank you personally. I've been involved with being briefed on this from you. I appreciate your diligence, the fact that you've spent several weekends in addition to your regular time working on this, and your leadership that you've provided to city directors and staff, as well as us policymakers, and I'm looking forward to your presentation. So with that, you're a star in my eyes.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. So I won't go into too much because this is truly the fire chief show here. But just wanted to kick off and say we did activate the Emergency Operations Center on Monday of this week. However, the fire chief had been working on a continuity of operations plan for several weeks leading up. So we were very well prepared. Even though we didn't know actually what we would be doing, he did know what we all would be doing ahead of time, which was fantastic. And we had a pretty big meeting on Monday, socially distanced, of course. We occupied the community center, about 20 some odd staff. And I just want to say I'm extremely proud to work alongside the executive team and on the others who are participating in the Emergency Operations Center, especially call out the chiefs and Steve Knuckles, of course, for putting together a significantly just a really good plan with a lot of foresight and adaptability as the situation changes. And I also want to call out our finance director, Jen Calloway, who just recently stepped into the role of acting public works director and is also now serving as the city's public information officer. Not sure how she's been able to do all these, but there's been no complaints. In fact, everybody seems to be very happy under her leadership. So, but every single director, Dana Swanson included, have done an exceptional job of trying to maintain normalcy with their day-to-day duties, but also stepping into this additional role and performing admirably. I'm very pleased. And again, I want to thank the community who stepped up big time. I named a few individuals, and I did forget to mention Hal Abrams with the local radio station, who's offering the airwaves to help get this message out. And there are a lot of others who I didn't mention who are just incredible, and we're very lucky to be a part of this community. So with that, I will turn it over to Fire Chief Steve Knuckles to go over the emergency operations plan and give you insight into how that's working and what that means for our community.
Thank you, Scott, and Mr. Mayor and Council. Today I want to discuss that we do have an emergency plan. We're using a plan that is recognized by the national government and also by our state. This is extremely important because of we want to make sure that if there's any type of reimbursement that we can get from Homeland Security, FEMA, or Governor's Office of Emergency Services, that we're dotting every I, crossing every T, and hitting every checkbox. Every city in our nation is going to be hitting up for some type of reimbursement, hopefully, and I want to make sure that we're on the top of the list because we were the best prepared. What is your role as an elected official? We're going to talk about that just a little bit. There's a couple slides in here that has a checklist to help the council members out. We did open up our Emergency Operations Center, and it's virtual. That means that we're trying not to meet in person. It's the first time I've ever been involved with an EOC at the city, county, or state level that we are not meeting in person. And so it's a lot of conference calls we're making. We're using our emergency plan plus the pandemic continuation of operations plan that was just developed. And I did, by mistake, put two times on the slide, the first slide, what is your role as elected official? That wasn't done on purpose. So we do have two plans we're using now. We're first using our comprehensive emergency management plan, and we brought this forward, I think, in January of this year. This is plan fits all the FEMA requirements and Office of Emergency Services in compliance with NIMS, National Incident Management System, and also with Incident Command System, which is required by state and federal law. And then we're also using our pandemic plan. That is a continuity plan, and which is this kind of unique situation that County Public Health, they are telling us how to react to this pandemic, but our main role is try to find ways to stay open. And that's all we're concentrating on, the continuity of operations, where I want to make sure our essential services are still running, that we keep our employees safe and keep our public safe. Mr. Collins stated that we did open up our EOC. You can see we did have our social spacing, 4 to 6 feet apart from each other. We're using the largest room we have in the community, which is at the community center, the big auditorium. We have met a couple times there, and we made sure that we are keeping our social spacing because it's vital that we keep our city employees healthy through this whole thing. So this next slide, it's pretty colorful. I don't expect you to be able to recognize the first slide. There's a lot of small print in there. But this is how your EOC is looking in compliance with National Incident Management System. And the next slide we're going to talk about is the command staff, also the policymakers. So if we look at the top right corner, that is our policymakers. That includes the city council. That includes the city clerk and also our city attorney. And the policy group, policymakers, their basic roles, they're going to be flying over at the 30,000 flyover. They're going to be giving general policy direction that affects the city as a whole. You have a lot of experts in your city staff. You have a lot of volunteers that are experts in different functions in our city. And the beauty of the system is that you give us good direction from the top, and then a lot of folks down below you are going to carry out the job very easy, very good. As we come down to command staff, we have our emergency services director, who is our city manager as per our municipal code. And the emergency services director will be the liaison between the EOC and the policymakers to make sure that we have good continuity of information coming from the policymakers. Also, the emergency service director is tasked to make sure the city does this and make sure the city follows a plan, make sure the city follows a plan that is compliant both at the federal and state level. The EOC directors on this particular situation is myself as the fire chief, and then the deputy EOC director is our police chief, Jody Cox. Excuse me. And as per the plan, we do have an operational area liaison officer, which is I'm carrying at this time. As per government code, I am the liaison to the public health director for our county. Our safety officer is someone that is very well astute with our city operation, as Jill Mueller. And then our public information officer team is led by Jennifer Calloway. She's doing a great job on getting the information out, both on print, out to, also with social media. And she does have a team with her that works at PD, also with the administration and one fire captain to help her out with social media. And also our public informationer, Jennifer Calloway, she's also representing us at the Joint Information Center at the county level, Kansas Road in San Luis Obispo, as the op area liaison for that. As we look at the next line, I definitely don't expect you to recognize, be able to read these words, but this is your operations. It's very small print. But I did break it down just a bit. We do have seven branches of operations for your city at this time. We have, starting right off top, we have our law branch that has an enforcement group and works with our volunteers with the city. The next one is our public works branch that has divided into divisions of utilities, facilities, corporate yard, and engineering. We also have our recreation branch, which has our facilities programs and a new division, and we're calling it senior food. Our recreation branch is working very closely with two nonprofits that will provide food for some of our residents that may have a hard time getting food while they're sheltered in their home. We have our community services branch that is divided up in planning, code enforcement, and building inspections. We do have our fire EMS branch that we are divided up in EMS group, facility, all risk, that's everything with the exception of medical, and as part as our pandemic continuum of operations plan, we are facilitating the personal protection equipment for all the city employees. There is major shortages, so we are prioritizing. And we are making our requests through the public health department, and we've been somewhat successful with them. And the last two branches we have right now is our harbor branch, which was divided up in facilities, EMS supplies, and EMS response. And our last branch is tourism. That includes representatives from TBID and also the Chamber of Commerce. As you could probably figure, tourism is very important. Our operational period is going from Monday to Monday. Our next operation next Monday, we're going to be adding one more branch, and it's going to be called VOAD, V-O-A-D, and that stands for Volunteers Organizations Existing During Disasters or In Disasters. That is a national term and a state term. We are using a volunteer coordinator, actually a husband and wife team. We're going to be helping us out, being the hub of all the volunteers that want to help, both as individuals and as organizations. My experience in larger situations in Katrina, up at the campfire with the town of Paradise in Butte County, and even in Santa Barbara County on the Thomas Fire, I have found that by having a VOAD coordinator for a community, we're not duplicating efforts. We're making sure that we have no holes in our efforts. volunteers have been so key in helping them with the recovery phase of any type of disaster that we may have. And I'm excited that this is the first time we're using something like that. And we're going to be tomorrow going to be more solidified on the collection information base, both on the website, both with online form, with phone numbers and an email address. And I'm excited about our two members that's going to be leading this section up for us starting next Monday. So the end results of having a EOC is that we're going to be developing a incident action plan for our city. It's about a 30-page document. It's up listed up there. And this document meets all the requirements by the federal and state government. And I'd like to list the objectives that we came up for this operational period, which ends on Monday, 8 o'clock. Our management objectives is provide the safety of the public, business, agency employees, their families, and first responders. Monitor the health of the employees to ensure that they receive proper and appropriate care. Ensure all emergency service delivery efforts are uninterrupted and now being fire, harbor, police, and EMS. Ensure continued public services on the continuity of government capabilities to protect the citizens and provide water and sewer services. Foster, contribute, and maintain relationships with all cooperators and stakeholders and support life-supporting measures. Provide for the timely and accurate release of incident information to the public, media, first responders, agency administrators, and cooperators. Ensure that the needs of the medically dependent individuals and those with access and functional needs are provided information and assisted. And investigate and develop electronic wellness checks on isolated vulnerable population. Now, how we're going to achieve those management objectives, we have some control objectives. How we're going to do it. We're going to support the Morro Bay's emergency declaration and seek ratification for the City Council in 7 days, which was done tonight. Ensure that management actions and efforts will be focused on serving, safeguarding, and protecting the community of Morro Bay. Ensure close coordination and communication between the Morro Bay EOC, County EOC, Public Health DOC, which is Department Operations Center, School District, and the City of Morro Bay. And our finance director has to love this one, is maintain accurate financial documentation, which may be necessary for cost reimbursement, which can take years after this event is over. These are very clear-cut, smart objectives, very specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-certain. Those are very key to the incident management type of system that we use, and very similar to what other cities and counties are doing in our area. The next couple slides are just some checklist items that the council can use to help us out with the EOC and make sure that these are just tools to help you aid us. First of all, make sure your family is safe and is taken care of 3 to 5 days. We really don't want to have our council members stressed that their family's not taken care of. Obtain a briefing from the city manager, the director of emergency services, and the information officer, and new policymaker conference room at City Hall. Now, this is on the checklist. We do have a policymaker conference room that was provided. Some of it was provided for by PG&E to help us make sure that the policymakers would be informed during fast-moving events. This event is very long and steady. Be prepared to attend any emergency city council session to ratify proclamation of a local emergency. Work with our legal team preparing required legal documents. Work with our information officer to conduct media releases and or conduct media interviews. Our information officer will provide talking points, will provide statements that any council member can use, and I can't think of better people to represent the citizens that other than people that were elected by them. So using our policymaker group to do interviews and conduct media releases, it's really beneficial to the citizens. Keep the staff liaison officer advised or avid of your location and contact numbers of all time. We'd like to get a hold of you, so we want to know where you're at. Attend all city council briefings by the city manager. Work to develop short-term policy resolutions to address such possibility as curfews, price caps, temporary contract agreements, or general policy needs. work with our information officer to enhance public confidence and image through electronic media. Work with the EOC management staff, elected state and federal officials, FEMA, SBA, to identify and develop resolutions and ordinances to enhance a rapid recovery, and establish and communicate with elected members of our neighboring communities. Just as our last slide, our last two slides, is prepared to participate in small business recovery forums with FEMA, SBA, business associations to assist with recovery efforts. Document, and we like to use a form that's called 214 forms. Submit your records, document, invoices, receipts, and information to documentation unit in the finance section. And what we're doing on this pandemic, because we want good social spacing amongst city employees, each department has a document box in it, and you can stop by and drop any of your documentation in any of those boxes. And the plans chief will be coming by weekly to pick up those forms. And work with assigned staff to forecast interim and long-term issues, including housing, revenue, economic, and development. And work with assigned staff to identify rebuilding capability. So that's a lot of stuff. That is a good checklist. I can look at this checklist, and I already can see great progress that the policymakers is helping us with. And the next slide I want to talk about is a pretty neat program that we have in our city, and it's called Morro Bay Cares. It's an enhancement of the Morro Bay RUK program, and we're working in concert with our Citizens Emergency Response Team members. We have a team of 66 personnel. 32 of them have signed up to do this program. They're starting Monday morning to make phone calls to anyone who signs up through our city website. You get to our city website at www.morrobayca.gov/COVID-19, and there'll be a link where someone can sign up electronically on our website, or they simply can call the fire department and we can sign them up. We'll have our CERT members call daily, Monday through Friday, just to call, see how they're doing, and if there's any needs. And we will entertain any of the needs, and we'll do our best through our city staff, also with our volunteers and volunteer groups that we have in the community to help our individuals, especially the vulnerable ones that are vulnerable to the COVID and they should not leave their home. We would like to support them the best way we can. And that's what I love about this community. I receive many phone calls and emails from our public who just want to help out their neighbors. I think with having a VOAD coordinator to help us define that process and help us delegate that process will allow us to provide great service to our citizens. And here's a copy of what the website would look like on our city website. You just want to go ahead and click on top. It says COVID-19 info. Click on that. And there'll be the top article on the webpage, and it'll have a link for individuals can sign up. I'm open to any questions about the emergency plan, the continuity of operations plan, our IEP for the week, about our Morro Bay Cares program, and or our new VOAD coordinator position.
Steve, thank you. Could you give a little update and remind people again what the RUOK program is, and then also give them the phone number? I know we said fire department, but it'd be nice to have the phone number. So just a little quick review of what the program is, because I think it's an outstanding opportunity for people to get checked on by our great paramedics, and we need the phone number too.
Okay. So with our program, it's actually a program that's nearly 30 years old. It's a program that we would call every morning to check to make sure for individuals that usually are living alone, usually have medical conditions, we call them every morning and ask how they're doing. We ask them, how are you okay? And they reply back, hey, I'm doing great today. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And we call our members on that program daily at 7:45 in the morning. And if we don't happen to reach them, we do contact their emergency contact. If they haven't reached them, we'll actually send a fire engine out there and go check up on them. We have many cases that we've had folks that have fallen that could not get to a phone, and we're out to give them a quicker service instead of finding a family member, finding them 2 or 3 days later where they're in much more distress. The program has been extremely successful. And by using Morro Bay Cares and enhancing that program and expanding it to checking on our vulnerable population during their sheltering in their house during 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks possibility, that I think is a great way for us to have one person with a voice contact, ask how someone's doing, and if they have any needs, and letting us try to find ways to help them out.
So if somebody were in need, couldn't get to the grocery store and were in need of groceries, you'd connect them with someone that might assist in obtaining their delivery or those kinds of issues?
Yeah, yes, sir. And we just don't know how to do it yet. It's going to give us a few days to figure that out.
Right.
And the phone number at the fire station is 805-772-6242. If no one's there to pick up the phone, just leave a message, and we'll enter them in the program. What we're looking for is your name, your address, your phone number, emergency contact person, and their phone number. And if you have any conditions or issues now that we can help you out with.
And I'll just add one thing. I just want to list out the names of our EOC folks, just so our community knows who's really making this happen, obviously led by our amazing Fire Chief Steve Knuckles, but we have Kirk Carmichael in Recreation, Erica Crawford from the EOC, our chamber is actually on our team, Jennifer Little from Tourism, Dana Swanson, our clerk, Eric Endersby, our Harbor Director, Joe Mueller, Utilities Director, Mike Wilcox, the manager of our Consolidated Maintenance Team, Matt Vieira, who's our Fire Inspector. We have Matt Bishop, who's a supervisor for Consolidated Maintenance, Travis Hash, who's a captain for the fire department, obviously Jen Calloway, we mentioned earlier, Jody Cox, our police chief, Scott Graham, our planning director, and Amy Watkins, our police commander, and a number of other folks on the team from police and fire to help us round that out, and other staff members, and really appreciate their efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief, for that great overview with that. This is a receive and file, but I'll ask if there are any questions. Council Member McPherson, any questions?
Really just one. I'd like to just ask, I think, the city manager, what's the current status of the city's employees? How many are working? How many are working from home? How many may be furloughed or...
Yeah, as of now, we are working through that, understanding how many folks will be working from home, and then a lot of folks will continue to work here in the offices. Those will be closed to the public, with the exception of the lobby at the fire department for wellness checks. We're still working through the numbers, but those who can work from home will, and those others will, will sort of do rotations to ensure we have social distancing in place. I'm able to do projects where teams are split up so that they're, again, honoring the social distancing requirements, but most of our staff will continue to work.
Okay. And are we at level 4, meaning a high event response is required?
It's yes.
Yeah, because in the operations plan, it lists the various levels, and I just wondered where you consider us at the present time. But I just wanted to also thank the fire chief for the excellent work. So
great, yes. Council Member Davis, any questions or comments?
Yes, just one question. Scott, you said that the only city facility that's open is the fire department lobby. Does that mean that the city hall is closed?
Yes, as of 3 o'clock this afternoon, we did send out a release to council, I think, right when this meeting started, as well as the community. But as of this afternoon, to comply with the order handed down by the county, we did close all of our remaining counters with the exception of the lobby for the fire department. So City Hall is still closed, or is now closed. We are responding to emails, phone calls, and the like. What we just sort of have folks understand is there may be delays, and our normal throughput of work will be slower because we're performing both the emergency function as well as some semblance of the day-to-day operations. But the key thing is we're really honoring the social distancing requirements handed down by the county and the essential services that have to be performed, such as, you know, emergency response, will continue to be done with the public interfacing, but that those individuals will proceed with extreme caution and to help reduce the spread of this virus.
Okay. I know that a lot of people come into City Hall to pay their water bills. Do you have some sort of a receptacle that they can drop their payments into?
Yes, good evening. This is Jen Calloway. We have the outside drop box that we utilize during regular operations. We have we do have staff in City Hall, and we have finance staff that's in City Hall. We'll be checking that daily regularly to get those deposits out for anybody that still wishes to drop them in there.
Okay. Thank you so much. I have no other questions.
Great. Councilmember Heller.
Yes, I don't have any questions, but I would like to say I'm looking forward as an Estero Bay CERT member of supporting the Morro Bay CARES program starting Monday morning. I'm very happy to have an opportunity to help the city in that way. Shout out to Chief Knuckles and Chief Cox and city manager and our department heads for just an outstanding job in the last few weeks, as I mentioned earlier, and I couldn't be more proud of you all and to be a resident of Morro Bay. Thank you.
And thank you for volunteering also, Councilmember Heller. Appreciate that. Councilmember Addis?
Yeah, just a couple questions. Well, one, I want to commend the work on this emergency plan, and I sat down with the chief a while ago around the time of the Virginia Beach shootings to go over this, and so I knew that we would have something in place, and I very much appreciate all of this work. But, Scott, what is in place for city workers whose kids are off of school? The governor said school might now be out all the way until summertime, even though local districts have not made that announcement yet. But the governor indicated that this is likely a very long-term school closure that could last many months. Now, what's in place for city workers in the way of child care, but also in the way of elder care, or if they have somebody at home who's sick? How is that being handled? And they need to care for that person at home or in quarantine?
Great question, and that was obviously on the minds of several of our employees when the school closure occurred last Friday. I'm trying to keep track of all the just ground-shifting events that have occurred.
It was like 4 days ago.
Yes, so, okay, so like 4 days
very
ago.
Very recent, yeah.
Yes, I don't know what today
Friday.
Is. Yes, okay, Friday. So we sprung into action told folks that, you know, you can't come in on Monday because you got a child to take care of, or if you're sick, or if you have an elderly parent that you're attending to, or grandparent, you take care of them. That comes first. We'll figure it out after the fact. We have leave balances that folks can use for those who don't have them, or extending allowances beyond that. I understand the county, one of their EOC folks who also was leading the regional housing effort, but everything's changed since last week. She's working to coordinate daycare or childcare for first responders across the entire county for first responders that have children that are in school to ensure that they can keep working. There are other things we're looking at, to help with those individuals and providing them work to do at home so they can still be productive. We're taking it sort of a case-by-case basis, but certainly want to provide them the opportunity to take care of their children, and if they're unable to find reasonable accommodations, that we're going to work with them on a case-by-case basis. But Jen Calloway has something to offer in addition to that.
I would just add that there's several regulations, both state and federally, that we're working to comply with, including HR 6201. They're allowing for paid emergency leave and FMLA leave. up to certain amounts of caps. We're allowing our employees that meet that criteria, of course, to utilize that and to make themselves whole with any accrued balances they have to offset any, you know, loss of wages. The city manager referred to those that don't have leave balances. We are offering to advance sick leave credits up to 80 hours if necessary for those employees. And as this evolves and may extend out further, we'll, you know, keep analyzing what that situation looks like and what the state and federal government comes down with any new regulations.
Okay. And then I probably should have asked this question in a different item, but we did have somebody write in about parking and parking restrictions now that there's now that restaurants are moving to pickup and delivery, will we do anything to ease or create parking? And I apologize, I know it's not under this item, but I wanted to get that answered for the person that asked it.
Because of the emergency we're in and the situation that we're in, we've have completely relaxed our parking requirements in the city as well as our signage requirements. So restaurants are allowed to, and the city has helped facilitate those posting those signs outside for restaurants that are providing pickup and curbside services, and residents are able to park as close proximity without any worries about our parking restrictions.
Yeah, and the only thing to add to that is, you know, we're not relaxing the red curbs and ADA parking, of course, but everything else, yes. As well, maybe Jen already mentioned, but signage, that we're relaxing our signage regulations so that folks know where takeout is available on the curb.
Okay, and then are there any, I apologize, I should ask this on the other one also, but are there any changes with the Thursday farmers market that you know of, or the Saturday farmers market? I know Slow closed down their downtown one, but there's been a lot of questions about other farmers markets and if they're still going or they're shut down.
Yes, they're continuing both Thursday and Saturday here with extreme, I guess, guidance or guidelines around social distancing. So I think they're modifying their layout to accommodate that. But they do provide food or sustenance, if you will, and so they are an exempted category, but they have to abide by those social distancing requirements to remain operational. So they are still going forward at this time.
I'll add, Councilmember Addis, that the Office of Public Affairs for the State Health and Emergency Office released guidance on the prevention of COVID-19 in food and beverage venues, and they specifically have a section on certified farmers markets that I have forwarded to Erica Crawford and ask her to implement as quickly as possible.
Thank you. I think that's it for me for the moment.
Okay. So this is a receive and file. Again, thank you, Chief, for your leadership. Scott, also for yours and staff. We appreciate that. And document so that we can get reimbursed later. That moves us to item number 3, ratification of the city manager's determination to activate the city's short-term fiscal emergency plan. And once again, either Mr. Collins and or Ms. Calloway, whoever might be leading this.
Yes, so I'll kick it off. So in addition to doing the local emergency declaration, also this week triggered the activating the city's short-term fiscal emergency plan. This is in recognition of the significant disruption that's being felt across the local and regional, state, national, international economy. We know that, at least anecdotally, the number of visitors to our communities has dropped rapidly as folks are sort of hunkering down in their own communities and putting off travel plans for post-pandemic times, if you will, businesses shutting down and to be in accordance with the health orders coming from the county and a higher levels of government. We anticipate that there will be very, very sharp drops in revenue to the city in short order. And this is also sort of balanced considering the expenditure plan that we should should talk about, which I go into, but also the flip side of that coin is the economic damage to our local economy and how the city plays a role in revamping that when we get around to the other side of this pandemic. But in short, the city's short-term fiscal emergency plan provides or identifies five conditions which trigger the emergency plan. One is natural disasters. Two is human-caused disaster. Three is state takeaways of local revenues. Four is large unexpected costs. And five is an economic downturn of two quarters or consecutive quarters. I activated the fiscal emergency plan under the national disaster, which is the COVID-19 pandemic. There are six mitigation measures which are outlined in the existing plan policy, if you will, that council adopted several years ago to anticipate something like this occurring so that we have actions that we can take immediately versus waiting to develop the plan and then take action. The first is a hiring chill, which means that the city manager must approve any fillings of vacancies, and we really will limit those to those that provide public health and safety or very other higher priority areas. The next is a travel chill, if you will, which means that any travel authorizations must come through the city manager's office. The goal is to limit travel and training to achieve short-term savings. Capital improvement plan, project deferrals and or reprioritizations. The departments may identify CIP projects can be presented to council for possible deferral or elimination, as well as reprioritizing capital projects that have non-general fund supporting funding. One-time operation cost review, identify special projects in the operating budget for possible deferral or elimination. Again, to be presented to council if we find those. Fund balance, consider use of fund balance below policy levels. City manager would make recommendations to city council. Currently, our fund balance for the general fund is over 25% or a quarter, which is a healthy reserve. It is called the Emergency Reserve Fund for a reason. We hopefully never have to face the time where they're needed, but this may in fact be the time where they're needed to help sustain the city's operations through the pandemic. And there may be other curtailments as appropriate under item 6. So the plan requires assessment of the situation, during which time the mitigation measures may be used to determine the duration and extent to which fiscal aid is needed. Given the just the rapid change in of our economy and just what's going on with the pandemic, I activated the plan earlier this week. And as per the policy, I must come to City Council to get that ratified. Currently, staff is assessing the impacts to our local business and local economy. Obviously, Erica Crawford of the Chamber has been a great conduit for us in getting local intelligence about what's occurring and what it means to our local businesses and what that ultimately means for the city in terms of revenue. The city manager has invoked several mitigation measures already, including the hiring chill, travel chill, and CIP reprioritizations and one-time cost reviews. We're doing that while also managing the emergency. We'll be now analyzing the impacts of the general fund as we get more information and possibly recommending use of fund balance or other curtailments as the situation evolves and our understanding of the other curtailments and the extent of impact is known. As has been discussed in the previous items, council members and the mayor and our local government local business partners are concerned about the impacts to their livelihood and what it looks like at the other side of this pandemic. So the flip side of the fiscal emergency plan is, in essence, the local economy emergency plan and what we can do to help on the other end. We do have, like I said, over $3 million in general fund reserves that are non-restricted. In other words, could be used for any purpose. We also have an economic development fund that has been we've been squirreling away to help with economic development initiatives, and that has surpassed $800,000. That fund could be used to support things like lease payments being deferred, TOT payments being deferred, other business incentive programs, loan programs, the like. I mean, we have flexibility with that, and at this time we're just getting our heads wrapped around what those options could be, but we certainly want to hear what City Council and the Mayor's thought, and I know the Chamber's also sent some ideas through email for public correspondence for consideration, and I believe Finance Director Jen Calloway had something to add as well. No? Okay, good. She gave me the look. Yeah, we're good. So in conclusion, staff recommends that Council ratify the City Manager's determination to activate the short-term fiscal emergency plan and report back to Council on economic impact and mitigation measures within 45 days or as emergency conditions allow. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you for being proactive in implementing this immediately upon the notice that we were in this pandemic and this emergency. With that, I'll open it up for council questions. Council Member Heller, you want to start us off? Any questions?
Sure. I have a question on number three, which addresses capital improvement project deferrals or reprioritizations. And the question I have is, and I'd appreciate if you could take this in the context, although I've been opposed to the project for many years now, I'm asking this question as a concerned council member as to whether or not we should be or would you plan to proceed with this project in the context of what's going on right now, and how do you feel about the fact that we don't have a firm price yet on what the piping portion of the project is going to cost, and just where you stand with that project?
Oh, sorry, great question. The fiscal emergency plan is sort of wrapped around the general fund. The wharf project, as members of the public are aware, is funded through rates through water and sewer collection rate collections. The city did lock in the historic low interest rate on the WIFIA loan just last week, right before the COVID situation escalated significantly. I think it was literally the same week. So half the project is funded with those low interest loans, and the other half of the project we're still in deliberations with the state revolving fund staff. And those rates will still be pretty low as well, below 2%, we believe. So the expectation is we would continue to work on that project unless City Council told us not to, because it is supported by a different fund, and it does provide, if it moves forward, local jobs potentially as well to help our economy. With regard to your question on the pipeline project costs, great question, certainly a concern of all of us in the bidding environment we're in, but things have obviously changed significantly just in the last week. We believe with the low interest rates that we locked in with the WIFIA, we are anticipating a 3.25% interest rate on half of the project, and it's down to 0.83. That saves us in the neighborhood of $800,000, $900,000 annually in debt payment, which provides additional flexibility if we were to experience a bid higher than we anticipate. I have been told by the city engineer, Rob Leivick, and our wharf program manager, Eric Caceres, that the team that's doing the design for the pipeline has been very conservative in their costs in terms of their contingency as well. So we hope that will cover us if the bids come back higher than expected. But again, the decision really rests with the City Council. Ultimately, we believe the wharf supports this item because it's a non-general fund expenditure and rate support.
Okay, and so you're comfortable that the SRF funding, in spite of the disruption that's going on with this virus, that the SRF funding will still be in place and we'll still be able to move forward without any hiccups. So that's your understanding of the financing?
Yes, sir. And the program team has been in consultation with SRF team, and there's no indication that even with the market disruptions that those are in peril. Certainly private investments, private loans, and those things are experiencing delays. But this seems to be that the government projects and the fact that this money is secured already for loans that we're still in pretty good shape. But if that situation changes, we absolutely will let council know.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your comments on that and answering that question. And I agree, it is a could be a great boon to the economy at this time. I hope everything falls in place and it can go forward. Thank you for answering that.
Thank you.
Great. Councilmember Davis, any questions?
Yes, Scott, the $800,000 that's in the Economic Development Fund, is some of that SB 90 money from Diablo Canyon Closure?
Yes, sir.
Diablo Canyon Closure?
Yes, sir. I would say a healthy portion of that is Senate Bill 1090. Sorry, we're hearing chatter on the side. Yes, most of that is from Senate Bill 1090. I think 600,000 of that is about, is that right, correct, Jen? That's all, okay, so I get an indication that's all SB 1090 money. There are no requirements that be funded specific to Diablo closure. It is economic development funds for cities. There may be some reporting requirements, but I believe if council were to use that to support our local businesses in some way, that it would be well in line with the guidelines for Senate Bill 1090.
All right, cool. And also, have we had any indications from the governor's office that there might be some relief for California's 482 cities regarding CalPERS payments during this emergency?
We haven't received any indication either way on that, but we are getting multiple messages daily on evolving topics, so hopefully that will be one of them.
Okay. I hope that we have an opportunity to weigh in with our opinion of that. So that's all the questions I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis, any questions?
Just on the wharf, is there any, well, I'm sad that that COVID overshadowed the good news about the wharf project and about the financing there. And so I hope when things calm down, we can really highlight what good news that is for the wharf project. In terms of workers and breaking ground, we were supposed to break ground this month, maybe. Is it safe? Does this project comply with the stay-at-home rules? Or what's happening there in terms of worker safety?
Great question. The project likely will proceed issuing a notice to proceed within the next week or so. Things have slowed down a little bit. We just in terms of turnaround times on things, as of last week, everything's been thrown into a bit of chaos. But we are sort of dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the last pieces to begin that work to issue the notice to proceed. There are requirements based on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that there's biological survey conducted, 48 hours before work starts for the red leg frog. So we anticipate that could occur as early as a week or two from now. Black and Veatch Feelonk has said they're prepared to move forward. They will proceed with the social distancing requirements. So we expect that work could continue with the pandemic, and is also supported by the county order that was handed down for sheltering at home, that this would be considered an essential service, if you will.
And then who monitors that on the job site, the social distancing?
Sure. There's a safety officer or there would be an employee for the construction team that would monitor that. They have to do that anyway to comply with OSHA and other federal and state requirements, so that would be an additional requirement that they would have to uphold.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Councilmember McPherson.
Right. I really just have one question, Scott,
and it's for you. How does all of this economic uncertainty impact the budget development process, which I believe you are starting already for the next fiscal year?
Great question. I probably will turn it over to Jen in a second, but we expect there'll be some delays in the processing because we shifted a lot of our focus to the emergency at hand. We do want to pick that up soon, though. Obviously, the information has changed significantly in terms of projected revenues and potentially projected expenditures could change significantly, too. So we have a bit of work to do to try to make sense out of the noise and see the story come forward. Jen probably has a better idea in terms of dates, but that's my rough estimate is things will be slowed or delayed. But we do have to adopt the budget prior to July 1st, or there could be some other efforts that could be made to extend the current fiscal year, but I'll let Jen answer that.
So we were scheduled to take a draft budget to our Citizens Finance Advisory Committee in April for their review prior to the budget study sessions in early May. We likely won't meet the April deadline for a draft budget. As we mentioned, we have several employees that are working remotely. That is one thing they're able to work on. So they are continuing to do that. We expect to have some form of a budget. The challenge is that we don't know our revenue sources and where they're going to fall in, particularly with TOT and sales tax, which are so heavily driven by our tourist industry. So we're going to do what we can. We're going to get the numbers that we can get in terms of expenditures and forecasting out our revenues. And we will have a budget or something ready for council to see. I would suspect there'll be significant budget adjustments as we move through fiscal year 2020-21 and start to see what those impacts are. So we'll have a fairly conservative budget to present to council and adjust accordingly throughout the next year.
But just to follow up, you do plan to come back to council within 45 days to give us a better sense of perhaps where we are economically and where we might need to use some reserve funds. Is that correct?
For the short-term fiscal emergency plan, we are suggesting to come back within 45 days for this current budget cycle. For fiscal year 2021, we might be looking into a long-term fiscal emergency effort.
Right. And are there any other things that you're considering at this point? I guess this is for Scott. Any other measures beyond the ones that are in the plan itself, such as furloughing or I'm not sure what they might be, reducing hours of employees, ways to reduce costs in the short term here?
At this time, we're not considering those, but we are open to, looking into a lot of different things. I think that the six or the five, if you will, provide significant flexibility and some balancing act for sure. And ultimately, we'll be looking for guidance from the city council on that for the values and goals you're trying to achieve. In the immediacy, I would hesitate to reduce hours or cut staff because our staff are our emergency workers during a crisis or an emergency, which this qualifies. So even the folks who are currently working from home, teleworking and the like, could be called back as emergency workers if depending on how this progresses or if we have another emergency occur at the same time, like a fire, earthquake, or something like that. So we want to maintain the staffing level we have now for the time being, but in the future it certainly could be a consideration.
All right. Thank you. That was helpful.
Good. Thank you. Very, very good questions. I don't have any specific questions, but I'll lead off on discussion. Again, thanks for your prompt implementation of this short-term fiscal emergency plan. My sense is if you look at item number five, we are also going to hit that marker This, in looking at national and state recommendations with regard to the impact of COVID-19, we're probably looking at a major downturn for at least two, if not three, quarters. And my sense is that, given that, we will most likely see consecutive quarters of declining revenues in our major sources of income, including sales tax and TOT. That, for me, presents great concern in terms of fiscal sustainability, although we do have healthy reserves that are there for these kinds of things. One is often very cautious in terms of dwindling down those reserves for fear that this might continue for an even longer period of time. I'll balance that with the need to support and sustain local businesses and offer assistance with that. And those are conflicting, in my mind, conflicting initiatives. And I'm having a hard time thinking about both of those. I do believe the city has a responsibility in assisting our businesses somehow with economic support. In a conference call we had earlier today with the city manager, myself, the chamber director, and the EBC director, Mike Manchek, we really talked about the need to have one central place for businesses to go to be able to access federal, state, and funding initiatives. And also potentially local initiatives. And right now, I think city staff is so stretched, it would be difficult for you to do that. And we talked about the potential of the chamber, given the fact that they have reduced their staff, they're not operating the visitor center at present, could be that clearinghouse for information. And so part of me wants to acknowledge the comment that was sent by Ms. Crawford requesting further funding for the chamber in order to perform those functions. And so from the standpoint of that, I would ask staff, given the magnitude of what the impacts may well be, and we haven't quantified those yet, how comfortable you would feel having us consider that recommendation for extending the ED contract and perhaps allocating some of the visitor center money over to the chamber to offer business assistance, but also how long would it take to come back with other recommendations such as TOT, relaxation, and or leaseholder concessions on penalties, etc., to the council. So
I'll just weigh in on with respect to TOT relaxation. I think we can relax time for submittal. TOT is based on actual receipts. So if they're only going to pay the city on what they received. So I'd keep that in mind. If they can't pay the first of the month as normal, we're not going to lose much sleep over that. But since their payments are based on receipts, they should be able to pay, you know, the amount owed. For the chamber, I'll let Scott weigh in on that. The chamber economic development ombudsman contract is paid for out of our economic development fund anyways. There isn't a general fund impact to that if that were to be extended. Our visitor center is paid out of the general fund, so that would be my only consideration with those two items.
Okay. Yeah, definitely open to it and would be curious to hear council's opinions on the visitor center. I know that we're already looking at that we were looking at that intently as to look at a different model or location or combination of thereof. So that one, I'm curious what the thoughts are of the council members if you want to take those funds and divert them into supporting the existing chamber efforts. From my vantage point in the several months, well, years that we've been working with the chamber, and specifically Erica, she's been a significant addition to this community and connection point to the local business community, but also out into the region and beyond, and an extension of the city in many respects to the things we can't do because we're We don't have the expertise or the time that she performs as the ombudsman. So I think whatever we can do to maintain that level, existing level of service, would be a good thing for the council to consider. The visitor center contract, I know Jen brings up a good point about the general fund, but I think we understand that the visitor center really doesn't exist as we know it today because we don't have visitors. So it could be that shifting some of those funds over makes sense. So, again, leave that up to the council to decide. But generally, whatever we can do to maintain that level of service would be extremely helpful, especially this time when local businesses are looking for help anywhere. In respect to the question about when we can come back with other options or ideas, we think we could look at this fiscal emergency plan of 45 days or less. I think the local economic package of some sort could follow that same timeline. I think those things need to come together at the same time because they, as you say, Mayor, they sort of speak to each other.
Okay, so with that, I'll maybe start us off with a motion, and then I'll if I do get a second, I'll open it up for discussion, of course. I would move that we ratify the city manager's determination to activate the city's short-term fiscal emergency plan, and that we direct...
I second.
Oh, I'm not... there are a couple of pieces to it. Thank you. And that we amend the ED contract, economic development contract, with the chamber to be amended to $6,500 a month, which is an increase of $1,334 to pay for additional expenses associated with the current efforts to assist our businesses with regard to the projected downturn in the economy, and that staff be directed to come back within 45 days to council with potential business assistance opportunities and a full report on potential financial impact of COVID-19.
I'll second.
Second.
Here you have a motion by Mayor Hedding, second by, I think I heard Councilmember Heller, but I'm not sure who weighed in first. And then I'll open it
that
up.
That was
for,
me.
Okay, great. I'll open it up for discussion.
I'd like to discuss, if you could, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
I agree with your comments 100%. The way I look at this entire situation is that we focus on protecting our own health as individuals. Secondly, focus on protecting and helping those around us, the health of those around us. And the third really key point is the economy of our town. And in reading this staff report, I feel like I have an enormous amount of confidence in our city manager and our Department of Finance and our department heads and staff. And this item gives them enormous latitude to move forward without necessarily coming back to the council with lots of little questions. And I feel like urgency is very important right now. And I really believe that as this is written, we should just give the green light to our city manager and very competent staff to just do what they think needs to be done within the limits of this item and not be too concerned about what needs to be brought back for us to review and talk about again. This is a very different point in time that we're in right now. And this is a time, I think, to let this group loose to do what they know how to do best.
Thank you. Other discussion?
I just would like to ask the city attorney if we may, in fact, take this action tonight since it was not agendized but appeared as part of the correspondence.
Councilwoman McPherson, that's a good question. So the chamber request to amend their current contract, if this purchasing policy is approved, the emergency purchasing policy, the city manager, if he determines that the need to approve the amendment is necessary to respond to an immediate threat to health, safety, or improved property, which I think this would qualify for if the chamber is going to be helping with the emergency response, the city manager would have the authority to approve that amendment under this purchasing policy up to certain limits anyways. In response to your question on whether the council should be approving it right now, I would suggest that the, any formal amendment to the chamber contract not be approved by the council tonight, with the understanding that, of course, council could request or direct city manager to proceed with review and action on the chamber request, which city manager will have the authority to do if this purchasing policy is approved, the emergency purchasing policy.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. That was my reason for asking the question initially when we were talking about the purchasing policy.
Yeah, to be clear, city manager determination that goods or services must be procured before the city council can assemble to approve the purchases, if in response to an immediate threat to health, safety, or improved property, then city manager can do so. Of course, all of these will be documented, and there's a number of different controls in the policy here. You know, it goes on for a number of pages to make sure the public's aware of, you know, what's occurring. But, you know, to echo Councilman Heller just spoke about, you know, this emergency policy is just that. It's for emergencies like this and allows city manager considerable authority that under non-emergency circumstances, of course, you know, no city would provide to the city manager.
So thank you, and thank you, Councilmember McPherson, for bringing that up. I'd be happy to amend my motion to exclude the recommendation regarding the economic development contract and just ask include that as part of what staff would bring back.
I second.
I was looking to Councilmember Addis, who was the second on that. Is that okay with you, Dawn?
Oh, sure. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, is that clear, and are we okay with that then?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Marlis. I apologize. You were going to say something?
No. I was just going to ask if you would amend your motion.
Oh, I did. Yes. Okay. So,
yes, you did.
Yeah, I did. Any further discussion on the motion? Any further inputs?
Can you see Council Member Addis? Because I can't see her.
Can I see her? No.
Me?
No. I'm writing down who makes first and second, so I take notes. That's how I knew.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Councilmember Addis.
So the motion is to approve the emergency finance measures, but to bring back what else we could do to react to this, the impending economic crisis.
Exactly.
Is that the gist?
Well, yeah, the extent of what the crisis might be and any recommendations for mitigation for businesses, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody
and
clear
if
on?
If I can point out, this is Chris again, the notification requirement for emergency purchases, city manager will be reporting those all to the city council in any event.
Great. Any further discussion? Well, thank you for that.
I just want to say that I'm assuming that the city manager, given that we approved the purchasing policy, could actually go ahead and modify on his own the contract with the chamber.
Upon the determination that the need to do so is, like I said before, responding to an immediate threat to health, safety, or improved property, then yes.
Right.
My review of the chamber's communication is that this would, I would think, fall within that category. That's the city manager's determination, of course, but, you know, they're essentially offering to help deal with the crisis, which seems
right.
clear to me is
right.
part of the authority given the city manager.
And I just want to add that, Scott, sorry, speaking here, I really appreciate the comments from the council members and Council Member Heller on the expediency path. That is correct. The emergency declaration, that's what it clears the path for, so long as we're accountable to our taxpayers and residents and citizens and the council members on that expenditure down the road. we will move quicker than 45 days on this. That was sort of the worst end. So expediency is the called at this point, and we're going to do our best to come up with some options as quickly as possible. So thank you for that guidance.
Great. Great discussion. Thank you all. So motion by Mayor Hedding, second by Councilmember Addis, and let's do roll call vote.
Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Well, thank you all for participating remotely, and that's what we will be doing. Mr. Collins, you have a comment, sir.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to remind folks that the council meeting was scheduled for next Tuesday has been canceled. We will try to return to normalcy as soon as possible on those items, but it may take some time. So as soon as we sort of have those together, we'll look to a future meeting that would probably look similar to this, maybe with it just being staff or no staff and it's all online. We'll figure out how that works. But thanks everyone for their patience and the outpouring of support from the community to support themselves and their neighbors. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Scott. Appreciate it. We will be looking at any critical items that need to come forward. The venue will be similar to this, although I will be calling in as well. And from here on out, and again, want to reassure our community that we're doing all that we can to support you during these difficult times. But please pay particular attention to the recommendations by our county health department for sheltering at home beginning, about an hour and a half ago, huh? As of 5 p.m. today. So thank you. Good evening. We'll see you soon. Thank you, council members.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.